There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Thursday. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. Of course, you're a big part of the show. On the text line, the phone line at 343-0106, 343-0106. And lots of things to talk about today, this hour, with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. I do want to just point out a couple of housekeeping notes here. Number one, let's go ahead and celebrate another winner here on our FM Talk 106.5 Fish and Photo Contest, brought to you by Sportsman's Marine. Where now Leanna and I were back and forth on what week it is. She said this is the end of week 12 and we're starting week 13. All right? So that's where we are. We are now moving into week 13 of this, and obviously y'all are digging it, and I'm real happy too that we've got another kid winning. Now remember how this works. You post your picture up, you go to facebook.com/fmtalk1065. You'll see the collage picture pinned to the top there of all the previous winners, and then you just post your fishing picture up. It could be you, could be you and the kids, it could be an old picture, a new picture, and then you invite your friends to vote for you to give the likes on that picture. And it's just as simple. The one with the most likes, well, they win. Right, so if your picture gets the most likes, and we do this once a week, and because we started this on a Thursday, our week goes Thursday to Thursday, and so as of today, we say congratulations to Kimberly Burge Jordan, the winner of this week's contest, with a picture of a 10-year-old's first snapper. So this kid is awesome. Got the first snapper there. 10 years old, nice snapper. And I don't know if the kid's going to get the shirt or maybe mom's going to get the shirt. It's that FM Talk 106.5 Fishing Team dry fit shirt with the speckled trout and the snapper on it, our logo on it, all that on it. So congratulations to Kimberly Burge Jordan for the winner of this week's fishing photo contest. Now we shake the Etch-A-Sketch in a brand new week. Get your pictures up there, and next week we could be talking about you. Also, heads up, tomorrow on Mobile Morning, mornings we'll be talking about the capacity limitations that have been announced here, possibly for Mardi Gras balls downtown. I know that Mary Lee Gay is going to join the Mobile Mornings team, Dan and Dalton, tomorrow. So just a note there, I know people had called about that. And yes, if you want to go wonder my reaction to hearing that story today that we are last in percentage of filling out the census, you can look at the Twitter feed where I've been talking about that as well. But all these are subjects that we can talk about with our Congressman Bradley Byrne, who joins us now. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, Sean, good to be with you.
Good to have you here. I mean, yeah, we can break those down one after another. Number one, I know you're interested in children catching red snapper. I know as a granddaddy that makes you smile.
Absolutely. I think one of the reasons why we are pushing things so hard on the fishing inshore and offshore is to give opportunities to young people to enjoy what I got to enjoy growing up, and it's just great that you've got that contest going, and I'm glad to see some young people are winning it.
Yeah, it is. It's good to see those pictures of those kids catch them. And where do you, for a second here, before we get into so many other issues of the day, any movement, anything been discussed in the House, through your conversation with other congressmen from the Gulf Coast here on any changes to Magnuson or anything new on that?
No change to Magnuson. They were supposed to have had a meeting of the Gulf States Council that week that we had mm-hmm. two storms in the Gulf, and they had to postpone the business for that meeting to another meeting they already had planned for October. Now, there was a proposal, is a proposal, that they would go in there, the council would go in there and recalibrate the data, because the data you've got from each of the four states is different because they use different methodology, and each of them are different from the feds. What they're trying to do, what they're trying to propose there is something that would further reduce the cash allowed. And I didn't know anything about it until Scott Bannon actually informed me about it. And we got on the phone with the people at the National Marine Fisheries Services and called them out on it. We've got a letter coming from all the congressmen representing the Gulf Coast to sort of take them to task for doing it after we worked all this out a couple of years ago. So we got to look for that Gulf States Council meeting in October and see if they make a change there, which we do not want them to do.
For sure. And by the way, y'all, if you can go back, if you want to see the kind of the in-depth on that and what the congressman's talking about trying to get done here, conversation, just search in our podcast, Alabama Marine Resources Director Scott Bannon or Midday Mobile, and you'll find those interviews. All right, that's one. And then, you know, I saw people on social media are trying to get me to go into a, get back up on my soapbox and continue hollering about the census. But I saw on your social media, I think it was on Twitter, you're promoting people filling out the census in Alabama. Report comes out. We're the last here. I mean, this is so critical for our state. I mean, we have so many outside forces working against us to possibly lose a congressional district, and we're not doing our part.
No, we're not. And my congressional district is not the worst in the state, but we're the next to the worst in terms of our percentage of filling it out. But as of the end of last week, only 58% of the people in my congressional district had filled the thing out. Only 60% in Mobile County, only 55% in Baldwin County, which is a particular problem because Baldwin County is the fastest growing county in the state. And if the fastest growing county in the state isn't filling out the form, then that penalizes Alabama's opportunity to hang on to that congressional seat. So we've got to get on this and get this done.
I don't, you know, and when I say this, Congressman, the phone lines and the text line will fill up with people say, in this audience, we filled it out. You know, I talked about when I did it online this year, I mean, it took 4 minutes. People say the same thing. Takes no time. They said, you need to talk to somebody else. I said, well, make sure you call your kinfolk and call your friends and let them know, because We're shooting ourselves in the foot. There's a bunch of people that are real happy to take our congressional seat away here, and it's going to hurt us. Well, tell folks, I mean, explain how that works, how serious it is if we lose a congressional district.
Well, we have 7 House members from the state of Alabama now, so we go from 7 to 6. Now, that's a pretty big deal, because that means you have one less person up there who's working with me and the other members of the Alabama delegation to get things done for the state of Alabama. You know, our delegation, the Alabama delegation, unlike many other delegations, we like one another. We work together. If Huntsville needs something, I help them get it. If I need something down here, they help me get it. And going from 7 to 6 means we have one less person who's helping us do that, and it's a big deal. And even worse than that, think of the terrible game of political musical chairs the legislature's going to have to play next year to figure out, all right, who's going to lose their congressman. And the thing I've always worried about that is that somebody will come up with the idea that we'll split Mobile and Baldwin County away from one another. Mobile County would be a district that would go sort of right up the west line of the state, and Baldwin County would go east across the southern part of the state and become a part of the same district with Dothan. I don't think that would be good for this area if they did that. So I'm doing everything I can to make sure I'm advocating against that. Now, I think I've said this on your show before, but in our case, the benefit we've got is that Chris Pringle is the chair of that committee in the legislature. And I know Chris will do everything he can to make sure that doesn't happen, but there are a lot of forces playing here. You lose a congressional seat, and everybody's going to start looking out for themselves, and I worry about what that might mean for us.
Yeah, and it, you know, worries me. I mean, there we can play super local like you're talking about and protecting AL1 and the link between Mobile and Baldwin County and Clark County, Washington, are the AL1 district, but the whole state is going to suffer, not just voices, but federal dollars that mean a lot for schools and people in our state.
Well, we did a press conference on this Tuesday morning with the head of ADECA, because that's who's sort of spearheading the effort here. And we had Hans Mack, the sheriff from Baldwin County, talk about the loss to local law enforcement agencies and fire departments for grants that they get based upon population. You don't think about that. School systems don't get as big a grants, once again, based on population. So it's critical for us to get these things back. And it doesn't surprise me that your listeners have filled out their forms. That doesn't surprise me. So to a certain extent, we're trying to reach people, excuse me, who are obviously not tuned in. And getting people aren't tuned in to do something this basic is not easy to do, but we're out doing it. People are working with churches. They're working with civic organizations. They're going through community leaders. We're doing everything we know how to get people to fill out the forms.
Yep, y'all do that. Listen to the congressman. All right, coming back, a lot to talk about, and questions already coming in for you. So we'll get those. We'll run to the news break, coming right back with Congressman Byrne.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Our conversation with our congressman, AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. And Congressman, I got to jump right into this, too. And where do we stand with the, as I've been referring to it, the way Speaker Pelosi did, the animal husbandry between giraffes and flamingos. In other words, the Democrat bill coming out of the House and the Republican bill coming out of the Senate for another coronavirus relief aid package, I don't know what you call it properly, HEALS Act and the HEROES Act. Where does that stand?
Well, we need to get the speaker out of her salon after she gets her hair done and get her into a room where she will negotiate with people, because she will not negotiate. She won't do it. And Schumer and the Democrats in the Senate say that they're going to let her be the leader for them. So Pelosi is holding everything here. So what we're told, and we had a conference call about this just the other day, we're told that we're nowhere in the negotiations, that there are literally no discussions going on at all. So we're coming back up there next Monday, and they've told us what we should expect is the bills for the week, and there's nothing in there about a COVID bill. By the way, the week after that, we're going to take up a bill to legalize marijuana, but we're not going to take up a COVID bill. And sometime after that, they're telling us we will get a bill to simply carry the funding for this fiscal year into next fiscal year, which is called a continuing resolution, so we get through the election without having to actually deal with what it takes to fund the government. So I don't see any coronavirus bill getting done between now and the election. Now, I think she's doing this deliberately. I said this on your show before. Yep. I think she thinks it's in her benefit not to have a bill between now and the election.
And to quote today, and you've said, I mean, you were concrete on this, last time, maybe the time before that this was going nowhere. And I get that, I get the politics of holding things up heading towards November 3rd. But for Speaker Pelosi to come out today, and I'm paraphrasing here, I don't have the clip in front of me, but to say essentially that we're not going to take okay when we can do so much better. And I wonder how that resonates with constituents of her home district, let alone people that are voting Democrat out there, that says, something would be better than nothing right now, and you're holding out for something when we have food we got to put on the table, rent to pay, children to send to school.
Well, she's got about 20-some-odd members of her conference, primarily these Democrats running in swing districts, who sent her a letter saying, we need for you to get back to the negotiating table. So she's bucking her own members by not doing it. But here's her calculus, and it's completely cynical, but this is the way she thinks. If this hurts Donald Trump and keeps him from being elected, and they're able to run the tables where they've got control of the Senate, the House, and the White House, then she'll just wait until January. She'll hold all the marbles, and then she'll shove through a bill the way she wants it to be, which will be a $3-plus trillion bill that bails out these northern cities and states that have mismanaged themselves so terribly. It's just her cynical game, and the national news media lets her get away with it.
How sure are you that they are running the table? I mean, I know that's her plan, but that's an interesting question. And we're going to cycle around to the executive branch in a second, but in the legislative branch, you're feeling right now on Republicans holding control in the Senate, and do you think that happens, and then do you think any ground is made up in the House for Republicans?
Yeah, I think we'll hold on to the Senate. the tightening of the presidential race helps our Senate candidates. I know that because I've talked to several of them. And so I think we will hold on to the Senate, and I think we're going to make gains in the House. Whether we make enough gains in the House to get a majority, we don't know yet. We need another 17 seats to have the majority in the House, and it's doable. It's no question it's doable. We've got some great candidates out there, and they're working hard and campaigning well. But, you know, she started on this line a month or so ago when the polls didn't look quite as good for us. So I don't know if she starts to have second thoughts or not, but she's showing no signs of it. And as I say, she's got no heat on her from the national news media because she can do no wrong with them. So I just don't see her going back to the negotiating table, which is ironic because she believes she's so great at negotiating. You know, she's always talking about how great she is at it. Well, she doesn't seem that great to me. She like does a pretty poor job, but I just don't see between now and the end of this month, when we complete our work before everybody comes home to go campaign in October, I just don't see us getting a bill. I don't see it.
So we'll quit reporting on it like it might happen, because you've been saying the same thing, and I believe you on that. Let's talk about, you said, the tightening of the presidential race out there. You know, of course, everything's the discussion today about the Woodward piece and the audio from President Trump about knowing how deadly the coronavirus is, but, you know, not wanting to get people, I'm paraphrasing here, not wanting to get people scared for no reason or to panic out there. My take is that in days of old, this might have gained traction and done something for a president past in the polls, but I don't know that it moves the needle. How about you? You have a lot more inside look at this than I do.
I don't think it moves the needle. 90%+ of the people in America have already made up their mind, Sean. It's a very small group of people who haven't made up their minds, and some of them are sitting in states that are long since already decided. You know, this all comes down to people who are still up for grabs in states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, North Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Arizona. I mean, that's where this comes down, is that small group of people that are persuadable right now in those states. And I think those people are not paying attention to this sort of thing. This is a chattering class type thing, not really something that grabs people. And the reason the races tighten is twofold. Number one, these races always tighten after Labor Day. That happens almost historically. Secondly, I do think that the riots have changed the discussion. I mean, I do think people are now saying, we want this to end. We don't want somebody that's going to sit there and let this continue to go on. So and then that's the thing that's why it's tightened. I think it's going to tighten further, frankly. We'll have a very, very close presidential race, and with all these mail-in ballots, we're likely not to know the true result for days. I mean, not like the next day. I'm talking about days, which is terrible because I remember so clearly what it was like in the aftermath of the 2000 election, where it took us days to get a final result on who was going to be our president.
But it's in 2020. I know everybody always says, well, it's worse now than ever, or this is the most, you know, divisive time. I mean, we've heard this, but I can say for right now, this is extremely divisive time. And every day that ticks off that we don't get results, I fear civil unrest. I fear a lot from this.
I do too. And I think we're all going to have to keep our heads about it as we go through that time period. Now, it doesn't matter who wins this race. Whichever side doesn't win this race, it's going to cry foul.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be a basis for that. You know, I'm not saying there's not going to be a basis for that. But this country's divided enough as it is. We don't need to let this divide us any worse than we already are.
Well said. All right, we're going to the news break. We'll come back more with Congressman Bradley Byrne. Your comments as well on the text line at 343-0106. 343-0106. Got questions for the congressman. So if you're waiting, said, oh, well, they'll probably get it done here in September. Pelosi will probably deal with McConnell sometime in October, and then we'll get the coronavirus. Congressman Burns said the same thing the last three times he's been on with us. Don't hold your breath.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, online at fmtalk1065.com. Plus, you can listen to us on your phone there with the TuneIn Radio app. Of course, podcast aplenty waiting for you through fmtalk1065.com. Just click the podcast tab or go to iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, really any platform that has podcast has ours on there as well. Continue our conversation with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. I'll start off with a text question here. Question for the Congressman. Can you explain concerning important bills like the relief bill, why something cannot be voted on based on 8 of the 20 items both sides agree on, and then visit the other 12 later?
Oh, the listener is exactly right. That's the way you typically get things done. You get serious-minded people who care about the country and want to get something done in a room, and you work through what you can get an agreement on, and you turn out a piece of legislation based on that. It's hard work. It means you don't get 100% of what you want, which is always frustrating, but that's how you get something done. But you can't do that if you don't have somebody that's willing to negotiate with you, which Nancy Pelosi is not willing to negotiate. And the whole time while she's sort of hiding in her office or hiding in her hair salon getting her hair done, you know, she's out there making public statements about the president and people like me that support him calling us domestic enemies. I mean, how do you negotiate with somebody that calls you a domestic enemy? It's just almost impossible to work with this woman. But as I say, she's the darling of the Democratic Party and darling of the national news media, and so they're going to give her a pass on this stuff. And that's just where the country is. We're stuck because of her cynical attitude. And she has the control. She's the Speaker of the House. Like, we're not there this week because she didn't want us to be there this week. We'll be there next week because she's calling us up there next week. We all got to do with what she tells us to do when she tells us to do it.
There was a little run on her power organized, and that got shut down pretty quickly. But I mean, just behind the scenes, inside baseball here, Congressman, I've always been told she holds power because she raises money better than most.
That's exactly right. She's the most formidable fundraiser among the Democrats, and with that kind of power, she's able to tell people, if you don't do what I say, you're not going to get the money you need for your primary or general election, whatever it is. And so they're scared of her. Now, there were some that weren't scared of her a couple of years ago, and not only, you know, didn't support her as speakers, they supported other people. And when we had the speaker's election on the floor of the House back in January of 2018, I guess that was, or 2019, I was amazed at the courage of some of those Democrats to vote against her, because you know that she went after them. She is pretty darn brutal about that within their group.
This back to a conversation we had about the general, and Dan and Daphne asking, how many days after November 3rd can the election drag on, or is there a limit?
Well, the limit is that the Constitution requires the Electoral College to meet, and its Electoral College cannot establish a majority of Electoral College votes for a single person, then the election gets thrown into the House. And so if you go look at the Constitution, it sort of lays it all out. So, you know, the Electoral College meets sometime in January before the president's inauguration date. And I was there at the Electoral College 4 years ago, and it's the real deal. I mean, you have the Vice President of the United States sitting where the Speaker usually sits in the well of the House, and you have tellers who are literally calling out the Electoral College votes as reported from each state. And then you have the opportunity for people in the House or the Senate to get up and object to those states' Electoral College votes. So, you know, they've got to at least do that process, go through the Electoral College vote sometime in January. And so they'll have to have it resolved before then. Now, it may be January before we get some of this in. I hope not. You know, we didn't really know who won the presidential election in 2000 until sometime in December. So this could get drawn out, and I don't think it being drawn out is going to be good for the country.
No, I don't think so either. I think it's a very different backdrop than it was you know, in 2000. This is a very different backdrop. I mean, it's primed, right? And both sides, you know, like you said, you know, you're going to have, no matter who wins, the other side's going to be upset and call foul on this. But how that is manifested in the streets is what scares me.
Well, you're seeing stuff happen in the streets now. Imagine what it's going to be like come December. Now, we may have another situation this year like we had 4 years ago where President Trump doesn't get a majority of the popular vote, but he gets enough of the popular vote in enough states to get enough electoral college votes to be the president. And I think you will find there will be people who will say he's not legitimately a president under those circumstances. And they're already in the streets. You know, they'd just be more. And with these northern mayors, big city mayors, who just basically will not allow their police departments to do what they need to do, you could have even more violence, even more destruction of property. And all they're doing when that happens is they're just running a lot of good people out of their cities, because the good people are going to say, I'm not staying here in the middle of all this. So I was talking to Sherry Sullivan, who's the new mayor-elect of Fairhope, and she was telling me about the number of people from those cities that are coming to Fairhope. I mean, so I think you're going to see a migration in America away from these large cities when all that happens. But it's terrible for the country. We've got extremely important things to do. We will not be done with this disease in January. We've got incredible things happening all over the world. Our economy is still recovering. We've got great opportunities for it to make a full recovery fairly quickly. But it's hard for all that to happen if we're just sitting here as the greatest power in the world, twiddling our thumbs and fighting one another over a presidential election.
You know, back to the mayors. We think about those mayors. I love your perspective on this. And not saying this is what you'd support, but just academically, let's discuss what the political calculus of that might be. Because I've been thinking about it, trying to figure out, just from straight politics, why they would not support police departments. I'm looking at the basic jobs at a municipal level, public safety, and getting the trash picked up. I mean, that's what, right, at a municipal level, that's like missions one and two on your list. Where would the political gain? You might get accolades from mainstream media or this group or that group, but how does it get you reelected for the mayor of the city for the next term?
Well, I don't know enough about the electorate in these cities to be able to know the answer to that for sure. But these mayors sure act like they're scared to do these things because they'll lose the support of a big chunk of their electorate. And if that is truly the case, that the majority of the people in these cities are okay with this, then those cities are no longer going to be viable. Because as I say, good people are going to say, we're out of here. We're not sticking around for this. I mean, just what's happening in New York City makes you cry. I mean, New York City made a real comeback, a huge comeback under Giuliani and Bloomberg. Everything about Bloomberg, he was a pretty good mayor for New York. And now this de Blasio guy, I mean, all those gains were made painful, difficult gains over years. They're losing them in a matter of months. Because people like me, I'm not going back to a city to go visit a city that's where I don't think it's safe. I'm not going to go back to a city where I could get mugged and the police won't do anything about it. And a lot of people in America are going to be like that. So this is going to be very bad for these cities.
Yeah, I don't know
if you've seen it or not. There's a member of Congress, a freshman, a Democrat, who represents Staten Island. And he has a new TV ad out for himself to get himself reelected. And all he says in the ad is that Bill de Blasio is the worst mayor that New York has ever had. That's all he says.
Well, it might be successful, because I don't understand. Once again, this is not even political to me. It's just like the business of a city. Because, okay, you just said, Congressman, you wouldn't go. I think you represent a lot of people that wouldn't go. So now we don't have sales tax. Now we don't have lodging tax in that place. And then on top of that, people leaving and fleeing the city, the property values are going to go down because they're going to be selling them for a lot less than they could in another situation. Therefore, the property taxes come down. All the things that fund that city's government are now going to be falling apart. I just don't know where the win is. It's not even political. I can't figure out the calculus.
Well, I did read an article by a guy in New York. He was serious. He said, it's good that all these people are leaving. Property values have come down, so somebody like me can afford to buy a place. And, yeah, we're going to lose some revenue, but that's going to be okay because Biden's going to win. And in January, Biden will just send us a bunch of money. He wrote that.
Well, at least he's got a plan there. We'll see how that works. What about that? I mean, is there any end? I know that I'm the broken record in this in our conversations, but things that are fiscal issues interest me the most. And I don't, you said, and I'm with you, I don't know when this coronavirus fight ends. When do we stop? We're talking right now about maybe getting something else done after the election for coronavirus relief. But what if things, what if they're still fighting the disease? We're fighting it for another 5 or 6 years. I mean, how much deficit spending and then, bailing out if the Democrats win, how much bailing out can we do of these other cities? I mean, when does it end? When do we say, okay, we can't pay back. We have no chance of paying back what we borrowed.
Well, if you listen and to what Biden and them are saying, they're going to go big. Even if we got the disease conquered, they're going to go big next year. And they will send a lot of money, and it'll be targeted to these large cities and states that have mismanaged themselves over a string of years and have got unfunded pension liabilities, and they're going to get the federal government to just bail them out. That's exactly what Joe Biden's planning on doing. So if he wins, then I think that's the direction we go in. If he doesn't win, then we're just not going to do that. Republicans are not going to, bail out these states and these cities that mismanage themselves. Just one little stat here. The fiscal year for the state of Alabama ends at the end of this month. Alabama will end this fiscal year in the black, okay? Mm-hmm. That's called good management. You say, be critical all you want about the governor and the legislature, but they have managed this thing pretty darn well, and they've managed our economy pretty darn well. These states that are having problems right now, it's because they have governors who aren't doing a good job. And I'm going to put at the top of that list Cuomo. I know his brother's got a show on CNN, but Cuomo's done a terrible job for the state of New York. And what he wants is for the federal government to send him a check. What de Blasio wants is for the federal government just to send New York City a check. Well, that's not the responsibility of people in Alabama to bail out a state like New York that's mismanaged itself, or a city like New York City that's mismanaging itself. That's not our responsibility. But that's what Joe Biden and them intend to do.
So, I mean, there's, for what you're saying, the incentive may be even more than just politics or their dislike of President Trump. Their push for Biden has dollars behind it. I mean, there's a reason here beyond they're going to make it about ideology or something like that. But in reality, it's about the best chance of them getting this bailout money is Biden.
That's exactly right.
All right, coming right
he
back.
He will bail them out. I guarantee you he will bail them out.
No wonder. Some strong support in that. Coming right back, more with Congressman Bradley Byrne right here on Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, continue our conversation with AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. And reminder, too, and we started talking about at the beginning of the hour with the Congressman. Y'all are stinking it, not you specifically, but as a state, stinking it up on this census thing. And Congressman, you said AL1 is second from the bottom in reporting as well. So we're one of the problem districts.
That's right. And to think that we only have 55% of the people in Baldwin County haven't filled them out. I mean, there's just no excuse for that.
Nope.
This is the fastest growing county in the state, and the state desperately needs the fastest growing county to have a really, really good response rate. We don't have it. So we had this press conference the other day in Foley to try to, jack everybody up and say, if you haven't filled it out, please fill it out. Critically important.
It is indeed. What do you see at, like you said, a stalemate, at least on the important issues between now and November 3rd? What do you see? Okay, President Trump wins re-election. What do you see coming up when everybody gets back in Washington. Do you think there'll be movement on some kind of infrastructure bill like the president had talked about when he was campaigning? And do you think that that has any benefit to the bridge project here at home?
I think something like an infrastructure bill would have to happen in January, not in November.
Right, right, yeah. I'm saying once he gets back in, when y'all get back, you know.
I think we'll get an infrastructure bill if he wins.
What about Biden?
Still control the House, I think we'll get it.
What if Biden wins?
Oh, well, I mean, infrastructure will be not a priority for him. His priority is going to be this brand new health care deal that he's working on that will allow anybody who wants to get Medicare, whatever age. Obviously, he's going to have a clean new deal, a green new deal that's going to be not quite as far as AOC wants, but pretty far. He's going to bail out these big states and big cities. So they're going to be too concentrated on stuff like that to get around to this. Now, I do think that there are Democrats that would like to see an infrastructure bill in the Congress. I mean, I've talked to them. And I do think that there's a deal to be had there. But once again, Pelosi was not interested in doing a deal with Donald Trump about an infrastructure bill. And I just think he's going to have to win this election and come back in January. And it's going to have to be a priority for him. I think it will be, and I think he'll be able to get something through.
I
think it would benefit our bridge.
So, and I wonder if anything would change with the 80-20. You know, if we'd go back to some measure where it was more doable, more federal. Yeah, because it used to be, I think when I first started talking about this, it was 80-20, but it was 80% federal, 20% amalgamation of local, regional. And then it seemed to have shifted. Or are those days gone?
No, it's still 80-20 on federal highway projects. But how that's allocated is up to the states. So it's totally up to how the state departments of transportation decide to do it. And different states do it in different ways. Now, our bridge project got messed up because the head of the state transportation department came down here and said, we're going to fund this completely off of a toll. And once he said that, once he made that comment, he just wrecked the whole idea that we could get something done down here. And so it's going to take very careful negotiations between local officials down here and Governor Ivey and her office to put this deal back together again. And they need to take John Cooper and put him outside the room because he's the problem.
There we go. We'll see what happens going forward. I want to know what goes on going forward with you, Congressman. I mean, you mentioned, you know, the good job fiscally that the governor and the legislature have done here in Alabama. Obviously, you have run for office here at a state level. Do you look at that? I know you're going to throw something at me and say, I just wanted to have some time with the family, but anything on your mind now going forward?
Nothing's on my mind going forward other than making sure that I do a good job all the way through the end of my term.
I don't doubt
that. I'm thinking about another political office right now, no.
Because, you know, there's a lot of people looking at state races and things that'll come up and maybe changes there. But you're not, right now at this point, not thinking about it.
Not even coming close to thinking about it.
Okay. It's questions I got to ask you. All right. I do want to remind folks, too, that, you know, you're busy right now. People want to get, whether you're talking about filling out the census or talking about some of the disaster declarations and all that. There's a lot for people down in AL1 to find out about, and you do a good job of reaching out to folks. What's best? Is it best to go to the Facebook page? I know I watch your Twitter feed. Where do you think it's the best place to go?
A lot of people do get our stuff off of Facebook. We have a weekly newsletter we put out by email, and you can sign up for that on our Facebook site. And a lot of people, I think like 25,000 people get that. So either of those two ways are probably the best way. But if you've got a specific question, you got a specific need, call my Mobile office. We're still working like crazy there. So and we've got a lot of stuff we're doing for constituents. So people need information or they need for us to do something, they should call and we'll do it.
Very good. Very good, because I think people will call here and say, I'm having a problem with this, that, or the other. And I say, have you called Congressman Byrne? they said, well, I didn't think about that. That's what y'all do.
That is what we do. And I have a really good staff that does a terrific job of following up on all that. And so we're doing that all the time. And we continue to work with local officials and local business leaders on some economic projects. We had a great meeting last week with one of the new shipyards about some work that they're doing for the Navy and more work they want to do for the Navy in terms of repair and dismantlement. So, you know, we continue to do our thing, and we're going to continue to do that all the way through to the very last minute that I'm the congressman.
I don't doubt that. After knowing you these years, I don't doubt that at all. Congressman Byrne, thanks for your time. Thanks for being on with us, and we'll get you back soon.
Good. Good to be with you, Sean.
All right. There he is, Congressman Bradley Byrne joining us. And, I think one of the takeaways I had there, I don't know if y'all had, that it stinks, but if we're sitting around waiting that there'll be something done on coronavirus relief, whether it's liability protection for businesses, whether it's a check going out, whether it's more clarity on PPP, wait on. Wait on. All right, Robert Kennedy Jr. joins me coming up next hour, plus his show is back on Friday nights. We'll talk about that as well. Stay right there.